Welcome back to the Deep Dive. For most of human history, when we talk about the soul, it's been treated as a pretty simple concept.
The default setting.
Yeah, the immaterial essence, a divine spark, the breath that makes us alive. It's just this static gift that we have.
That's it. But the collection of sources we're diving into today, they just bypass that generic idea completely. They get much more specific, almost technical, and frankly, a lot more demanding. They define the soul not just as your spiritual component, but as the spiritualizing self.
The spiritualizing self.
Yeah. It's this dynamic, growing thing, semi-spiritual. And its whole purpose is to bridge the gap between our physical, day-to-day consciousness and ultimate spiritual existence.
And the mission, the high-stakes mission of this spiritualizing self is cosmic survival.
Precisely. It is meant to be your immortal self. It's the part of you that possesses what the material calls cosmic survival qualities.
So it's the part that ensures your identity, your experiences, everything, that it all persists after the body is gone.
Exactly.
All right, let's unpack this, because this is where it gets really compelling for me. The core idea for this deep dive is that this immortal self, it's not just downloaded into you.
Yeah.
It's not a gift given whole.
Mm.
It is profoundly, partly your own creation. So we're going to explore the architecture of this self, how you build it, and why that building process is the absolute precondition for eternal life. So when we talk about our identity, it's easy to kind of mush the mind and the spirit together. But the sources, they lay out a very clear three-part architecture for the self.
Right.
You have the material body, the physical self.
Right.
We have the mind, which is our intellectual conscious self. Mm. And then you have the soul, our spiritual counterpart.
And the creation of that third piece, the soul, is fascinating because it has this deep duality in its origin. It doesn't just, drop fully formed from the heavens.
Right.
It actually originates right here, specifically from the spirit potential of your mind. Every human mind has that latent potential.
So it starts as just a possibility.
Right.
An opportunity space inside our own consciousness.
Yes, but it only really begins its existence as a joint creation. It's a partnership.
A partnership.
It requires active collaboration between your personality, the you making choices every day, and the spirit of God that lives within you, what the sources call the inner spirit.
This means we have to draw some really firm lines here because the words can get fuzzy.
They can.
We have to be clear what the soul is not. It isn't the personality.
No, even though the personality is the theater where it all happens.
Exactly. And then this is the big one. It is not the inner spirit. It's not the actual presence of God.
That distinction is just crucial. The inner spirit is pure, it's divine, it's eternal, it's the guide always trying to spiritualize your mind.
Okay.
The soul, though, is the result of that interaction. It's the actual growing spirit body, the spiritualized version of your mortal self. It captures and carries forward all the worthwhile truth-based experiences you have here.
That makes the soul sound like a living archive of meaningful life.
That's a wonderful way to put it. It's a semi-spiritual entity. And it is alive. And what's amazing is that from its very first inception, the sources say the soul is real and already has these cosmic survival qualities.
But they also admit we can't prove this empirically, right? You can't put a soul under a microscope.
Exactly. The material is very pragmatic about this. You won't find the soul through scientific inquiry or, philosophical debate. The existence of this growing immortal self is a truth you can only discover through personal spiritual experience.
Internally.
Yes, especially as you mature into a morally conscious individual, its reality is affirmed from the inside out.
Okay, so if the soul is a joint creation, that right away implies it's not static, it's dynamic. It has to be grown.
Mm-mm. Through effort.
Which brings us to the question of Genesis. When exactly does this spiritual counterpart even begin to exist? When is the soul born?
The sources are remarkably precise about this. It's not born at your physical birth.
No.
It's born with your first moral choice. Yeah, it's that moment you consciously show that you can determine right from wrong, good from evil. That's what kicks off your spiritual entity.
So that completely shifts the definition of spiritual birth from like a passive event to an act of choice.
Yeah.
An act of moral agency.
Precisely. And that capacity, the ability to recognize truth, to know God, to strive to be like God, that's the defining trait of the soul. It's what identifies us as true spiritual sons and daughters of the Creator Spirit.
So this potential for moral recognition is what makes us all spiritual brothers and sisters.
That's the idea.
So once that seed of agency is planted, the growth mechanism kicks in. We know how the body grows. You nurture it, you exercise it. The mind grows through learning and wisdom.
Right.
So how does the soul grow? What does that spiritual activity or that exercise actually look like?
It looks like continuous moral striving. The core activity is harmonizing your daily choices with the spirit power inside you to create what the sources call an eternal alliance. Okay. Every time you make a moral decision that aligns with the spirit way, that's the guiding impulse of the inner spirit, you nurture the soul's evolution.
Let's dwell on the spirit way for a moment, because that sounds like a very technical term.
It is.
And it raises a huge question for me. I mean, human beings have deeply, deeply different, sometimes conflicting ideas about what's morally right.
Of course.
So how is this an internal compass and not just, you know, cultural programming?
That's an excellent and, I think, unnecessary challenge to the idea. And the sources clarify that the spirit way isn't some list of rules dictated from the outside.
Okay.
It's the immediate personalized guidance of the inner spirit, which is inherently wise and loving, acting within your specific situation. It's about honesty and sincere inner direction. And the specific activity that fuels this beyond just inner choice is service.
Service.
Whenever you help others, whenever you show sincere care, that action exercises the soul with love.
So the outward act of loving service kind of solidifies the inner moral decision.
Exactly. The inner conviction drives the outward service, and the service reinforces the conviction. And this focus on inner striving leads to the standard for how it's all evaluated.
And what's that?
There's a clarifying quote that really drives this home. It says, "The evolving soul is not made divine by what it does, but by what it strives to do."
So it's the effort, the sincere intention.
That's the growth hormone for the soul.
Now we get into a trait that the sources highlight as uniquely human, self-reflection.
Mm.
They say this capacity is intrinsic to the soul, and it's what sets us apart from the animal world.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to define the line between just simple self-consciousness and this deeper thing, reflection.
Right. Self-consciousness is essential, but it's just awareness. Awareness of yourself, awareness that other people exist.
Okay.
Self-reflection is evaluation. It's the ability to objectify your own inner life, your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, and examine them at arm's length. It's the conscious ability to be morally mindful.
That distinction feels so crucial. Because, I mean, for a lot of people today, sitting down to think about themselves isn't reflection. It's just rumination.
Yes, exactly.
It just becomes self-criticism or anxiety, not moral mindfulness. How do the sources help us tell the difference?
The key is sincere moral evaluation and the presence of the spirit of truth. The sources describe true self-reflection as an essential meditative exercise.
Meditative.
Right. If you're just focused on your personal failures, that's rumination. If the focus is on figuring out the moral meanings and then actively choosing divine values going forward, that's reflection. Reflection is always constructive. It aims for growth, not just wallowing in mistakes.
So if I'm getting this right, reflection is like the quality control for the whole joint creation process. It's the feedback loop.
Absolutely. And when this reflective thought is intentionally helped along by the spirit of truth, it helps us discern the truth in a situation, which means it's always linked to wisdom.
So reflection turns experience into wisdom, which the soul then absorbs.
That's it. And this process has a spiritual consequence, too. It's not just, you know, psychological cleanup.
What do you mean?
It's a form of spiritual engineering. Continuous, morally mindful self-reflection actually opens up a wider spiritual channel. You increase the amount of divine love, wisdom, and energy you can receive from the inner spirit. It makes the partnership that creates the soul even stronger.
All right, let's shift focus to the ultimate payoff for all this hard work.
Yeah.
The sources are absolutely emphatic. The material body, the material brain, they perish.
They do.
But the soul, this cumulative result of all our choices and reflection, it survives. They call it the celestial shuttle to eternal life.
And its survival is guaranteed because the soul itself is not material. And it's been imprinted with an eternal purpose. It's designed to combine with the enduring parts of your personality and form the nucleus of your new immortal self on the next world.
There's a beautiful quote about this, about the origin and destiny of this creature we're building.
Mm-hmm.
"The soil of the evolving soul is human and material, but the destiny of this combined creature of mind and spirit is spiritual and divine."
That captures the meaning of human life perfectly, doesn't it? This brief, intense period where we merge the human with the divine potential. But there's a serious caveat tied to survival, a big reality check.
Which is the crucial necessity. Without a developed soul, nothing of your personal identity survives.
Correct. The sources state it plainly. If an individual has consistently refused to make moral choices aligned with the spirit way or failed to partner with the inner spirit,
then there's nothing of you to resurrect.
Nothing of your personality identity. Your potential just returns to the great pool of universe energy and your personal consciousness dissolves.
That's a stark implication.
Yeah.
It really confirms that this whole creation process we've been talking about, the growth, the striving, it's essentially the creation of your ticket to the next life.
It's the creation of the self that is capable of that eternal journey. Now, this often brings up a difficult question for people. What about infants or people who, through no fault of their own, just don't have the cognitive capacity for this kind of moral deliberation?
That's a deep question. How does the material address that capacity issue?
It responds by saying that the divine presence, the inner spirit, is always just. If the capacity for choice was never there due to death in infancy or severe limitations, divine grace handles it.
Oh.
The potential for survival is carried forward independent of those moral choices. The requirement for joint creation only applies where the capacity for choice is fully present and being used.
That provides some vital context.
Yeah.
But if we do survive, if we choose to move forward,
yeah,
the sources warn us not to expect instant perfection.
Oh, absolutely not. No jumping the queue.
Right.
You can anticipate an amazing life of eternal wonder, for sure. But survival isn't a bed of ease. You don't magically become a flawless being. You start exactly where you left off.
So all future achievements, all future growth, are still earned through personal effort and experience.
The work of spiritualizing yourself never stops. So as we wrap up, the core takeaway for you, the listener, is really one of empowerment. Your soul is your own ongoing dynamic creation.
Mm-hmm.
It's fueled by your continuous moral choices, and it's sustained by honest, morally mindful self-reflection. You're not just passively waiting for salvation. You are actively building the very entity that survives.
And since this work is apparently eternal, let's leave you with a fascinating and I think a slightly provocative thought that completely redefines eternal bliss.
It comes from Baha'u'llah.
I love this statement.
He noted, "A complaining soul complains even in paradise."
Just think about that. It's a phenomenal statement because it just challenges that whole notion of eternal life as some kind of static perfection.
Right.
If spiritual evolution is the goal, what does it mean that bad habits, a poor disposition, a complaining nature could persist even in a spiritual environment? It suggests that the quality of your disposition, the patterns of thought and reaction that you build right now through moral mindfulness, that's the very thing that determines the character of your eternal progression.
Perfection isn't instant. It's a long earned journey.
So the effort to refine the soul, to choose to strive every single day, that really is the eternal work. Keep building.